Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland, and more information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of MAMI, an art exhibit at Yale Union in Portland. MAMI is a group show that considers the mystery and chaos of motherhood, and in reaction to the sentimentality and laments the culturally constructed binary of, quote, family versus career, while acknowledging the persistence of that obstacle in the lives of artists. Again, that's MAMI, showing Thursday through Sunday, 3 to 6 p.m. until December 20th at Yale Union, located at 800 Southeast 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
I'm Dee Mae Roberts, Stage and Studio. We're listening to music from Seattle harpist Molly Bauckham. Hear her music at harpermolly.com. Today I feature two contemporary shows that are from two new Portland companies that have adapted classical works for a modern audience. I'll be joined by Kate Belden of Polymath Art Theater, and we'll hear about their adaptation of Macbeth, a dark retelling. We'll also be joined by Jeffrey Puka, who adapted and directed and is directing Women of Troy for his company Play on Words. Today, a look at the process of making classical works responsive to contemporary issues, so stay tuned. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. With me in the KBOO studio are Kate Belden, hello.
Hi.
Of Polymath Art Theater, and also Jeffrey Puka, hello.
Hi.
On Play on Words, or from Play on Words, and you're both the first-timers here on Stage and Studio, right?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Sometimes I forget, so this is good. It's welcome both to Stage and Studio. First up, I wanted to have both of you, Kate and Jeffrey, would you tell us a little bit about your companies? They're fairly new in town, so Kate, would you tell me exactly, you know, how it came to be and why the name Polymath?
So polymath is a Greek word, I believe, meaning many studies.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, yeah, and it's kind of a gender-neutral version of Renaissance man. It's everyone involved in this production has some other talent, skill, ability that they use in theater on a regular basis. Our director is also a bit of a playwright, a bit of a performer. I playwright. I do a lot of tech. There's a shot from our when we're loading in where we have three people in costume who are all building and or hanging something up on a ladder. Like everyone in the room is multifaceted and very skilled and abled.
I like the alternative to Renaissance man or woman. I really right. like that. So I might be using that.
Please
in the future.
Please do. It's a great word that I didn't know until my friend Katie, the other major force behind Polymath.
What's her full name?
Katie Vivica Nichols.
And so you both started. You started the company together then?
Yeah, we actually went to college together, and we both ended up here in town by separate ways. She went through Jersey, and then came this way. And then we were having a conversation. I was doing some fight choreography for a show that happened to be Macbeth. And I talked about this idea that I had, and she pestered me about it. And about a year later, I finally had a script to hand her.
Well, we'll talk about that right. in a second, but that's good. The origin story is really interesting to me. Jeffrey, let's talk about your origin story for your group.
Yeah.
So Play on Words, where does that come from?
Play on Words, it has to do with using the words, I suppose, with looking at the text and going from there. And I also really like the abbreviation. it's primarily the show came first. Women of Troy came first. We started working on it, and there was absolutely no infrastructure, and so you know, it became a challenge of, well, how do we do this in some kind of an organized way? And, you know, starting a company to kind of
from blanket, the ground up, yeah,
to blanket yeah. over that yeah. became the solution. And that company is play on words. So Women of Troy, world premiere of the text, and inaugural production for Play on Words.
Well, you know, that often happens, too. I mean, you can decide to start a company and then do some plays,
yeah.
but then you can also have this passion project that you have with a play, and then you build the production company out of that.
Yeah.
So there's different ways of forming a company. And
that's,
Kate, you had a thought about that?
That's entirely how Polymath started, was this idea. We both knew we wanted to make theater, but, like, different
how?
Projects right, and right. different things that we were both separately doing. I have a playwrights group that I'm a part of. Portland Playwrights, by the way. Come hang out with us.
Check it out.
Yeah. The great group.
Are you with Portland Playwrights too, Jeffrey?
I'm fascinated by them. And,
well,
and
now
I,
you're going to have to join.
This Tuesday, we're meeting.
Because every Tuesday you do table
every
reads.
Other Tuesday,
every
yeah.
other Tuesday.
And then on fifth Tuesdays, we have a workshop because there's like 3 or 4 a year.
Well, people can find out about that on Facebook too, because
yes,
there's a great
do.
Group.
Yeah, it's a great. But the origin for Play on Words sounds pretty similar to Polymath. Was we had this thing we really wanted to do. Everyone kept asking it, well, what group are you doing it for? And we finally went, Polymath. That's the group. And it's great because now we have a way of referring to ourselves without bringing our own names back into the conversation. Like, oh, we're doing it for this company called Polymath
yeah,
Arts. And they're,
right.
you know, they're a great local organization. Like,
well, there's so many different ways to go about this thing we call theater, right?
Right.
I'm Dee Mae Roberts, stage and studio. With me in the KBOO studio, I'm talking with, just in case you joined us, Kate Belden of Polymath Art Theater and Jeffrey Puka of Play on Words. And they're both here to talk about their new productions, which are all about taking what would be considered like traditional classical works and making them into new works that are relevant to today. Kate, in Macbeth, a Dark Retelling, it seems that you're focusing on Macbeth, Lady Macbeth, actually, and her position in society in which she's trapped and she doesn't have many options.
Yeah. That's exactly what we're doing. Thank you for reading that.
Well, you know, I actually played Lady M years ago.
Oh,
and
such a
I
good
always
part.
Thought from her perspective she had a raw deal. You know,
it's really interesting because she's regularly referred to as the strongest female character Shakespeare ever wrote. And she has some major gaps. Like, there's some cause.
There's, like, missing episodes
yeah,
in her storyline.
There's some reasoning, and she's very, very intelligent, but there's some reasoning missing. The idea is that being king is not, or becoming king is not the hard part, it's staying king. And that discrepancy was interesting to approach that.
So you fill in the gaps a little bit with
yeah,
this show?
Yeah, the idea is that she doesn't want to stay king. She doesn't want him to stay king. She doesn't want him to stay around for too long, in fact. Although that...
I could see that.
Very much waffles and wafers throughout the show. The idea of... those gaps and the situation she's involved in, and then this with the approach of domestic abuse and how very much a person can be trapped in a relationship or in a society that ignores the fundamental problems.
Well, my
in their
theory is that she wanted to be king, you know, and instead she's married to somebody
right.
who, you know, because she didn't have that ability to be the king.
Right. In Shakespeare's time and in very much in our own time, that's still not a thing that's an option for a lot of people. She is the wife of, she is the hand of, not the leader of. And it's very fun to play this part with that awareness.
Well, I always thought that, you know, you said that, you know, Shakespeare's that's the strongest role in
right.
Shakespeare.
No.
But, you know, I played Hortensio in a female version of Taming of the Shrew, and I had more lines than Lady
right.
M.
There was I got to work on, I was stage manager for a production of Cressida, Troilus and Cressida, where the focus was just on Cressida. If she wasn't in the scene, the scene didn't happen. And the play was about 30 minutes long.
Right. So that's interesting
yeah.
to focus on that. So you took some of that, and in your retelling, what did you borrow from Shakespeare? What did you recreate?
It's almost entirely Shakespeare's words.
Okay.
We've changed some tenses every now and again when we're trying to bring something on stage rather than happening recently off. We cut 40 pages off it. It's his shortest script at 106 pages, and we took it down to 58.
By focusing on her?
By focusing Well, first we cut anything that had to do with England. Like any mention of someone that doesn't come on stage, we just took it off. We cut a couple characters. We mashed one. Ross is now like three different characters in Shakespeare's script, and we just turned it into Ross, right. Which is a trick I learned from Scott Palmer over at Bag and Baggage. He's like, no, just make them all one, because then we're more interested anyway. And their relationship became more of a focus, but it was really just telling the most effective story. So she's not in every scene by any means. She's still actually one of the smaller stage presence parts. Malcolm's on stage a bit more than I am.
So you're playing Lady Anne.
I am.
All right.
So it was really just about telling this story most effectively with the idea of the societal construct and pressures.
Well, it sounds fascinating to me, and it sounds like you're going into some really deep territory, because you said there's a trigger warning mm-hmm. for the production. And Jeffrey, we'll talk about yours in a second, but you also have sort of a warning or an advisory about content, too. So tell us what this trigger warning is, Kate.
We were very concerned to talk about this issue and upset people who it affects fairly closely.
Especially domestic violence.
Right. So the trigger warning is for domestic violence and abuse. We portray it on stage. Lady Macbeth, in fact, dies on stage due to Macbeth's violence.
Yeah.
So we want to talk about this topic, but we don't want to do damage while doing it.
Well, also in theater, it's so much more when you see the person right there.
Yeah.
Any amount of violence is so much more increased than something you watch on a film, I think.
Yeah, well, it's happening in the room with you.
It's right. It's so immediate.
In this production, like, the room is not that big. Like, the idea that you could get some spit on you is, you know, not
unheard
impossible.
Of. Yeah. Especially with Shakespeare.
There's friends of mine came to see the show and they brought their son, which was great. And he's a fan, like a friend of mine. We hang out all
How
the time.
Old? How old?
He's seven.
Wow.
And he sat right there as like I got thrown to the floor. And fortunately, he's, you know, theater aware enough that it didn't, you know,
he
knew
upsetting.
I was fine.
Yeah.
And we didn't want people walking into the room knowing that we were going to be about domestic abuse without knowing that, no, really.
That there is something that could be
heavy hitting.
Disturbing.
Quote unquote.
So do you recommend an age?
Older, yeah. This is not a kid's show. We do have a kid in it, adorable young McDuff.
The McDuffs are in, huh?
Yeah. Okay. And so the McDuffs so are in there, die on stage.
Yeah. That alone is a disturbing scene,
In Shakespeare's version, and we don't make it any better.
Right,
we don't make it any more comfortable.
But it looks like you're really trying to say something different with this, too.
Yeah. There's a great advantage to having such a known text, especially in this town where we know Shakespeare so well. I appreciate that about Portland. And to use it to talk about something, the language allows us to get more in depth, whereas we can't just have someone in today's English come up on stage and talk about hitting their wife, but we can put it in a Shakespearean language and have it still get listened to.
Well, you said that the space was small. Tell me, because I don't know this space. What is it?
The Lightbox Culture House.
Yeah, I have it here. Where is that located?
It's 2027 Northeast MLK.
So what is that space?
Is that
a new
space? It's usually like a dance studio.
Okay.
It's a gorgeous, it's a black box, but it's white, which is perfect for Macbeth. Because then you just get blood everywhere.
Okay. How many people does it sit?
We seat 40.
Okay. All right. Very intimate.
With room
You're
for...
in the room with the Macbeth.
Yeah.
Oh, my word.
Yes, you are.
You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dumay Roberts with my guest Kate Belden. Kate Belden of Polymath Art Theater. Thank you.
Who's all
running
tongue
math
twisters.
And art all together. It's confusing.
It's great.
Polymath Art Theater, who's running Macbeth, A Dark Retelling, till November 14th at the Lightbox Culture House. That's located at 2027 Northeast MLK. And also with us is Jeffrey Puka. He's the adapter and director of Women of Troy for his company, Play on Words. And it's a world premiere that's running November 6th. This is your tech week, Jeffrey, through the 21st at PSU's Lincoln Hall. Jeffrey,
now radio show. That's amazing.
You know, he's devoted. I understand you've been working on this, though, for a couple of years for Women of Troy, the script itself.
It's been evolving. And in fact, I think the whole project from the first tiny seedling through to where we are now has actually been about 10 years. But It came about wanting to direct the story more than having found a particular text, or more than wanting to write a particular text. There were moments and kind of images and bits of sort of storytelling framework that I knew I wanted to be able to arrive at on stage without feeling like I was taking somebody else's very, very beautiful translation and then saying, okay, we're doing this.
Because it was written by Euripides originally. Many, many millennia ago.
Yes.
So what is it about the story of Women of Troy? And give us a little synopsis so that people coming into this will understand.
Well, for me, Women of Troy is absolutely the middle center boiling pot of the Greek epic. It is what the Iliad leads up to. It's what the Oresteia and the Odyssey kind of spin off from.
So it's sort of in the middle there that everything's like, even the hub of the wheel, isn't it? With the spokes going out with all the other stories.
So many of these very, very, very great archetypal characters are absolutely changed, and in most cases for the worse, because of the events following the last few days of the massacre at Troy. And primarily our story has to do with a woman called Hecuba, who is the surviving, although deposed, queen of Troy. Very sad woman, very poor woman. Pretty much everybody that she loves has either already died or is taken from her.
She's the mother of Hector.
And,
her sons have been killed.
Yes. She was the wife of King Priam, the mother of Hector, the mother of Paris,
who originally brought Helen back.
And the mother of Cassandra. The mother of Polyxena and the stepmother to, mother-in-law to mm-hmm. Andromache, and grandmother to the baby. And I think what Hecuba is in the context of this play is that it really becomes a play about hope. It becomes a play about watching people who are ordinary human beings, and you get to that point where everybody says in one way or another, or intimates in one way or another, I'm done. I can't keep doing this. I can't go on. The carpet is completely swept out from under all of their feet. And you see Hecuba and her women keep going long past that breaking point. And so it as much as the play is influenced by the Greek army and the ugliness of war and the brutality of war and the violence and aggression, for me, the play really is a story about hope. It's about going on. It's about survival.
After being decimated as a civilization, because that really was the end of Troy.
Yes. We do get the sense that we're sort of midway through a genocide, and this genocide will in fact be complete when the last of these characters that we meet on stage dies.
It's about the survivor spirit in many ways, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And do you use it as an allegory for modern warfare too?
No. Well, war is war. War is war. Conflict is conflict. And I mean, certainly, if you think about the last 2.5 years or so that this has been brewing, many, many things on the political and world news landscape have popped up, and that seeps in. Classics are those magnets, and anything in the headlines is just going to seep in, and it's going to be in people's consciousness as they watch the play. It's in our consciousness as we do the play. But it's to do more with hope and more with survival. It's not particularly a metaphor for
or anything that's specifically topical right now.
Yeah.
How much of Euripides' work is present in this?
I think anybody who knows the Trojan Women, his text, will recognize it. We have reordered the structure to make it feel slightly less episodic. We use the idea of a chorus in a completely different way. And there are characters brought in from other Greek plays like Agamemnon and Odysseus.
Oh, so you're mixing it up a little bit.
Well, yeah. I mean, we looked at what led up to I looked at what led up to the Trojan Woman, and I looked at what happens afterward. Mm. And there are so many characters that are referenced in the Iliad and other things, and you know they're there, but Euripides didn't include them, primarily, I think, to do with that kind of dramaturgy of his time. We can do that, and I think it makes the struggle to hold on to hope that we see from Hecuba and her women feel stronger when we see what they have to bounce back from. So yeah, it's a new architecture, but anybody who knows Euripides' play will recognize it.
Well, I'm Dime Roberts, stage and studio, and I'm just talking with Jeffrey Puka right now from Women of Troy, and also Kate Belden of Polymath Art Theater. And I'm wondering, you have a reading for us, Jeffrey. So you have a piece, and we have a piece of music from composer Peter Armetta, who's providing original music for the show. Let's hear a little bit of that. Very eerie. So, Jeffrey, you have a reading. Would you introduce that excerpt for us?
Yeah. This is partly to do with what you were talking about genocide. This is Hecuba. This is one of her kind of central arguments, I suppose, to a character called Helen. Helen of Troy, the face that launched a thousand. Mm-hmm. Helen kind of waltzes in without any real sense of consequence. And there's a point at which Hecuba just sort of loses her patience with her. And she says, "What have you lost? Your marriage you ran from. Your playmate. My son was more than that. A roof for now. You need a place to go. My people have lost all we've ever known. Our homeland's not our home. Troy is not Troy. We have lost our identity, and in some few years' time, our culture and our race will be what? What, a myth? If even that? If we had never been, it would mean not much difference. We're already ghosts here, just put to pause until we go or die." That is what it all boils down to for her, is that everything, you know, one of the things that we talked about during our kind of early rehearsals was this idea of sort of proportional response, you know, by governments to, you know, and the response here by the Greek army's battering of Troy goes so far beyond anything imaginable, and it is unnerving, I think, for me to sort of see in slow motion, zoomed in, this idea that everything is leaving.
Well, it sounds fascinating, and that music, I want to give a shout out to for
Peter Armetta.
That's wonderful.
It's
music.
Beautiful composer.
You have a warning or advisory for your show as well. Do you want to talk a little bit about that for our audience?
Yeah. Well, our warning, we haven't recommended a specific age, but very much like Kate had mentioned, we wanted to be sensitive or aware of the fact that some of this content is very difficult, and the exact text of our warning reads, "Audience advisory: Women of Troy contains violence, yes, it does, including torture in the form of interrogation and sexual violence.
Well, I think that's important to have those, because a lot of times if you walk into a show thinking it's going to be one thing,
yeah,
especially with the classics, yeah, there's a certain expectation, right?
Broadswords.
You know,
and,
right,
and
right.
Big
we're just
going to
have fun. Yeah. It's going to be, you know, just.
They're
going to
talk
rah,
about
rah,
death.
You know,
it's
yarr,
going to be separate and over
right,
there
right,
and
right,
not affecting.
Yeah. And for Greeks, it's like, oh, you know. So.
Yeah, no, we don't have
like,
any of that.
Here's the chorus coming well to tell you everything. So this is completely different. So what is the power of the classic? I want to bring Kate Belden back into this, that would shed light on issues like you are bringing out: domestic violence, violence of war, abuse between people and relationships. What is it about the classics that can bring this out more than, say, writing a whole new modern script?
Well, there's a great efficacy in both Euripides' like writing and Shakespeare that allows us to get carried away with it. Whereas when we see a great play, no matter how well performed, when it's about something this uncomfortable, you're gonna separate yourself from it. Whereas the language of these texts allows us to just get carried, like go with it and be affected. So it breaks down that barrier a bit for us. And it's been really useful for in the rehearsal process to have that language to rely on whenever there's like the emotional shutdown that's just like, nope, I don't want to deal. Oh, but these words are just too gorgeous.
Uh-huh.
And you have to go with them.
So the language,
yeah,
is a draw. How about,
yeah,
you, Jeffrey?
Yeah, I think that there is for me theater is very much living in the air between the actors and the audience, and that's what you have. A good text, a poetic text, you know, what we have from Shakespeare, what we have from so many of the classical playwrights, helps amplify all that stuff in the air between the performers as it radiates out to the audience. So I think it helps because it's people.
Well, Women of Troy, the world premiere stage adaptation of Euripides' tale of post-war survival, opens this November 6th and runs through the 21st, Thursday through Saturday evenings at 7 p.m. and Sundays at 2 p.m. All shows are at the Lincoln Hall, number 55, also known as the Boiler Room. What is the Boiler Room?
Okay, so the Boiler Room is a thrust space at Lincoln Hall. It's a very deep thrust.
The black box space?
No,
there's another space.
Yes, it's their newest space.
Oh,
it's
okay.
About 2 years old.
Wow.
And this new intimate thrust theater was built in the part of Lincoln Hall that used to house
the boiler room. The old days. Well, that's interesting. I'm looking forward to a new space. That's always good to know. So all shows are at Lincoln Hall on the PSU campus, and that's located at 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. For tickets and information, visit playonwords.org, or you can visit stageandstudio.org too. And Macbeth, a dark retelling by Polymath Arts Theater, performs at the Lightbox Culture House. That's located at 2027 Northeast MLK Junior Boulevard in Portland. The shows run November 5th, 6th, 7th, 12th, 13th, and 14th at 8 p.m. with Saturday matinees at 2 p.m. And for more info, visit polymathart.wix.com/ I think bent nail something.
Bent nail.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then you can get that at stageandstudio.org as
great.
Well.
Thank you.
You know, two new spaces for all of our theater folks listening right now, you know, to check out, as well as these great plays. So I think, you know, it's going to be great to, you know, to check that out and check out your productions, because they both sound fascinating. And the reason I wanted to bring you together is that you had so much in common, so maybe there's some cross promotion in there for you too. So Kate Belden of Polymath Art Theater, thank you, and good wishes on the rest of your run.
Thanks so much.
And of Macbeth, a dark retelling, and Jeffrey Puka, break a leg this weekend with Women of Troy.
So much
for
fun.
Play on Words. So much fun you're having. Thanks for joining me today and delving into this classical versus modern versus adaptation topic today. That's it for Stage and Studio. Hear the show again at stageandstudio.org, and you can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and like us on facebook.com/stage_studio, or tweet me at @stage_studio. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts. Let's go out with music from Seattle harpist Molly Bauckham. Hear her music at harpermolly.com.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the first CMJ College Day on Tour, Saturday, November 7th at Holocene in Portland. College Day aims to fill a day with great programming and speakers from and related to college and non-commercial radio, allowing both new and experienced voices from the radio world to talk about the issues that matter most to them. At this all-ages event, there will be live music, innovative workshops, presentations, and interviews with key members of the music and radio world from the Pacific Northwest and beyond. Again, that's College Day on Tour, Saturday, November 7th at Holocene, 1001 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.